Welcome, you're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Adam and Garth. It's Thursday, the 13th of August 2015. This podcast is available from iTunes and also podomatic.com for the moment. But you can also go to our website, which is krazfiles.com, always C-R-A-Z-Z, krazfiles.com, and a whole ton of our podcasts up there. And of course, our weekly podcast goes up on the front page there. Lots of news links, all sorts of things going up on the website, so please check it out. And thanks for listening each week to our podcast show. Okay, Garth, we are plugged in for another week.
Ready to go?
Ready to rumble? And great show to get today. We're rejoined by Barry Eaton. And Barry was with us, Garth, last year. So if folks want to go into our website, into the archives there, you'll see our talk with Barry. And Barry's been gracious enough to join us again today for a chat. Barry, welcome back.
Great. Thanks a lot, Adam. Good to be back. And you guys are doing some great work. I love your new website.
Thank you very much, Barry. Yeah, yeah, it's about time. I had to do something. I guess it was, Barry, that I was we were scattered all over the internet, and you don't want that. It's good to have one place for people to go to
very
get
true.
Your work and listen. So always works out well. Barry, you're on with us today. I wanted to sort of reintroduce your books to people. And just in case because since we put the new website up, Barry, and when we talked to you, I wasn't on social media as well, so we're doing well over there and Twitter and everything and getting a lot of links out. So for any new listeners, sort of catch up with you again on your books and talk about that. And also the release of the book in North America, which is big news as well.
Yeah, it has been, Adam. It just got released at the beginning of August, only a few days ago, really, as we're talking. And I've had a tremendous amount of interest in it so far. Some beautiful reviews from Amazon, various other magazines and that. So I'm absolutely delighted because there's such an acceptance now of the word about what happens to us when we so-called die, which we don't. We've talked about that before. But, you know, after we leave the body, after we pass over, what happens? Where do we go? How does it work out? And what can we learn from the other side? How can they teach us? So I'm absolutely stoked at what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, it's and the books, the newest book is No Goodbyes, Life-Changing Insights from the Other Side. And your first book, if I'm correct, Barry, was Afterlife, Uncovering the Secrets of Life After Death.
Yep.
Has that been released as well with No Goodbyes?
Yes. Tatcha in the United States, which is an offshoot of Penguin Books, they released Afterlife back in 2013, so just on 2 years ago. And No Goodbyes, as I said, just came out. That's the follow-up. I go into the afterlife in a lot greater depth with No Goodbyes, and they got such a nice reaction from Afterlife, which I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but why not?
Why not?
Afterlife is now officially a bestseller, so I'm absolutely delighted with that as well. So Tatcha jumped on the wagon and said, yeah, we want No Goodbyes as well. So it's now released in the United States, Canada, and I'm getting interest from many, many different countries all around the world.
That's great.
That's great.
And let us go into this a little bit, because I'm... The great thing about No Goodbyes and Afterlife, Barry, is I picked up No Goodbyes again the last few nights. It's, honestly, like, Garth, Barry, if you sat me down in front of a computer and said, you know, here's all the tools you need, write a book, Adam, I'd turn to stone, Barry. I'd be like, with my mouth open, I'd be like, that'd be I don't know where to start. I wrote an article for Renegade Tribune, Garth, the other week about the vaccine damage, you know, with the flu vax, but that was hard enough referencing, and Barry's writing books, so it's not an easy thing, Barry, I can imagine, to write books.
It's not, Adam, but the thing is, you know, don't forget, I've worked in the whole area of radio, television, broadcasting. I was trained in the theatre. I've been a freelance journalist and writer, travel writer, many different things over the years. So that was a contributing factor, and I believe was the lead up to my real purpose in life, which is to actually get this information out. And I do honestly believe that. I'm not being hokey, as they would say in the States here. I do believe that my purpose has been moving through this whole communication area in life to be able to now get these books and write them. It was quite a challenge because I'd never written a book before I wrote The Life. And to turn around, instead of writing maybe 1,000, 2,000 words in an article somewhere or doing a radio or a TV show, to suddenly churn out 200 or 300 pages of book was quite a challenge. It took me over three years to write Afterlife.
Yeah, it's not... That's a big challenge, Barry, but great. Anyway, but
you know, with no goodbyes. As I said, I read through it, but then I lately just been picking it up and going to different chapters for reference. And that's what you can do with this book. And it's such a warm book and easy to just pick up anywhere, really, once you've read through it. And when you're just thinking about something or something happens, and you can go into that book and get some wisdom there. And it's a really warm, easy, flowing, nice book to read anyway, Barry. So well done on that. I can see why so many people are enjoying your work, you know?
Oh, thanks, Adam, because that was the way we decided to set it out. My Australian publishers, Alan and Unwin, I was working with a wonderful, wonderful lady called Maggie Hamilton. Maggie was the publisher at that time. Maggie's written some great books. She'd make a great guest for you guys, too.
Yes.
She's fantastic. She really is. And she was my publishing mentor back for Afterlife. And we worked out what we wanted to do. And Maggie's principle was, with a book like this, you want to write a chapter long enough so that if somebody's sitting on a train going to work, they're commuting to work, they can actually read a chapter and not have to get caught up and miss the station. And so you can read a chapter in between each station, sort of thing. And it sounds a bit strange, but it actually works out. So in No Goodbyes, I've got 55 different chapters, and each one of them relates to a specific area. Now, we're not talking about one or two pages. We're talking, you know, so there's enough information in each chapter to be able to concisely describe what it's all about. And that, I think, is exactly, you hit the nail on the head there, Adam. Being able to pick it up and say, all right, well, I'm looking at the moment, animals in the afterlife, first thing I jump out at here, chapter 27, or else genetic modification concerns, accidents, suicide, euthanasia, comas, prison reform, TV in the afterlife, all these are separate chapters, and they're answering questions that they want us to know in the afterlife. They want us to be able to explore these mysteries, because they're not really mysteries. They're just things that we've never, ever touched on or actually ever been encouraged to touch on.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Garth and I talk about that a lot, Barry. And let's go into what the book's about a little bit, because I think it's hard for people to understand, Barry, that we're non-physical beings, aren't we? And we're here in a physical body for a short time, experiencing things and this existence and gathering information. But it's hard for people, because they're so locked into their bodies in this life, to sort of think, well, you know, if I die, there's nothing else, you know, there's nothing else after this, because they can't separate that spirit from the physical. It's very hard for some people to do that, because I guess here it's so dense. So talk a little bit about your book, Barry, and what this means, because reading through it myself and, you know, it does help you sort of start to make that separation of your sort of physical body, your flesh and bone, and your spirit. You know, you're not locked into just your body, and when you die, that's it. It's all over, blackness forever, you know, and this is what brings a lot of fear into people thinking about death. And as you said in your book, Barry, a lot of people spend a lot of your years worrying and fearing death. And when you make that disconnection and understand what it really means, you can enjoy your life a lot more, and life opens up a lot more as well.
Well, that's spot on, because our belief systems throughout the years have been, you are a body with a soul or a body with a spirit. And it's actually the other way around, because the soul is just an energy source. And it's, I established in No Goodbyes by talking to my people on the other side, the difference between the soul and the spirit, by the way. And the spirit is actually the vehicle for the soul. The soul is that energy. The spirit is the vehicle in which it travels. And then the spirit attaches itself to our body so that we can have a human experience. Now, when that human experience is over in each lifetime, the body crumbles and perishes, and off it goes into whatever the next stage is, whether you bury it or whatever you do with the remains. But the soul lives on, because it is energy, and the law of physics tells us energy cannot be destroyed. It can be transmuted, but it can't be destroyed. So where does that energy go? Well, it goes back to where it came from. Logical. And you call it the afterlife, call it heaven, call it paradise, call it the other world. There are many, many different labels, but they're all exactly the same. It goes back to the world of spirit as such, and that's our real home. We come here to Earth to have an experience, to learn, to grow our soul, because that's the prime purpose of each lifetime, to have as many experiences as we can, to learn, to develop our soul, and also, by the way, to balance karma that we've brought back from other lifetimes. Now, I do talk about this a lot in No Goodbyes, because karma is not just something that you do by, you know, if you're nasty to somebody, it's going to get you back. Karma can go from lifetime to lifetime. We might be working on karma from dozens of lifetimes ago in this particular life, because the circumstances allow us to do that. So life is to be enjoyed, life is to be experienced, but life is also to be thought about and not just go into it willy-nilly, charge your head, charge of the light brigade, and at the end of it you suddenly find, whoa, what have I done, where have I been, and you are going back over to the other side and reviewing what you've done, and you're thinking, wow, why on earth did I do that?
Confusion. Yeah, I guess, Barry, it would make sense that the non-physical laws and the spirit laws would be totally different, obviously, to the physical laws. I mean, we go to sleep every night and we have these dreams, you know. People can actually, you know, if they practice and meditate hard enough, Barry, from what I've read, they can leave their bodies at will and walk around the room and do things outside. So, I mean, I've had similar dreams like this. People have all sorts of dreams, Barry, floating, whatever it may be. Is it so hard to believe that, you know, you don't actually die? I mean, you know, it's, you know, the more I look into it, the more it makes sense. And reading your book, it really makes it clear. You know, it's a sad state for people to think that they, you know, they just live this life and then you're just dead. It's that atheist attitude is, it's a sad one, really, but, you know, you've got to hope that more people are waking up to this, and I think books like yours definitely help. But it is trying to make that disconnection, isn't it? Because I guess people get so bogged down in the physical experience, Barry, and their emotional contacts and things that are happening in their day-to-day life and their work, and you don't get to spend much time on the spiritual aspects of life. And you know, I know that people who are elderly should start preparing for the death experience, so it's a comfortable transition. Do you agree with that, Barry?
Oh, yeah. Look, life is the physical, because that's what we wake up every day in a body. And getting back to what you said before, yes, we do leave the body at night, because the soul, as an energy, doesn't need to sleep. The body needs to sleep. We need to physically recharge our batteries. But the soul at night wanders. It leaves the body and goes back into the afterlife. It communicates with people there. It communicates with our guides. We've all got many guides that we work with, and we go back and examine all sorts of things. That's why sometimes people will wake up the next morning with a firm plan in their mind. In fact, it's a great way to be able to go to sleep and say, I really need some kind of help in this area. I did that with this particular book. I was halfway through No Goodbyes, and I was a little bit stuck as to where I was going to go next. I communicate with a wonderful mentor on the other side by the name of M. He just wishes to be known as M. And I went to sleep one night saying to M, look, really, I need another aspect of this book, M. What do I do? The next morning, I woke up with a clear message, past lives. Go into your past lives. I thought, okay, thank you. So I went off and I found a wonderful past life therapist, Colleen Dooley, who was a guest on my show earlier this year, actually. And Colleen works with the Michael Newton group, Life Between Lives. She did a four-hour regression with me, and I've talked about some of those past lives in the book No Goodbyes, because we can learn from our past lives. So that's how we can, at night, leave the body. Yes, some people, as you said, Adam, can consciously do this. Robert Munro, who wrote all those wonderful books about leaving the body and exploring the other side, and started off the Munro Institute, he learned how to do it. And yes, you can learn how to do this, but we do it subconsciously anyway. We don't have to really try. But if you want to remember these things, yes, there are programs out there to help you remember the next day. But we're so busy all the time, you know. Oh, I've got to wake up in the morning and get the kids off to school, got to get to work, got to do this, do this, do this, do this, do that. We're so busy, we don't stop to smell the roses and listen and get those wonderful messages that are around us all the time.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you think with past lives, Barry, it's a good thing, considering that many people could have done a lot of evil things in past lives? Do you think that's a positive thing to re-step back into that?
It needs to be done in a very positive manner. Going into past lives, and I work with people in past lives. I'm planning to do a lot more of this, actually. I'm working with a guy called Peter Smith, who is the president, international president of the Michael Newton Institute. And Pete and I have worked together on the Afterlife conference earlier this year. We were at the Nexus conference together. And I'm going to be working with him to expand my own past life therapies for people. But the thing is, you don't go into a past life for the Hollywood time tunnel experience. You go into a past life to explore what you can learn about yourself in this lifetime that needs to be experienced. Finding the answers as to why maybe you're stuck. Why can't you have a good relationship? Why are certain things happening in your life that you cannot explain nor rectify? And the answer can quite often be found in past lives. But it's, as I said, it's not just to go in there for the fun of it. Oh, I've got nothing to do this week. I'll go and see what I did back in ancient Egyptian times or whatever. No, forget it. You have to do it as a therapy. You have to do it with a positive intent and not just something fun to do. And if you find a therapist that's willing to do it just for fun, then you're not working with somebody who's very responsible.
So you must link that with your present life.
But it certainly is, that is the prime focus of past lives.
I see, yes. Well, what's your, into that with particularly the pre-birth experiences, you know, some of that comes in because there's been many, many cases of people that are in the spirit world, if you like, seeing their mother that is going to be their mother before it is. You know, quite crazy to get the head around that one, but it appears that that's very being looked into by various people, particularly people like you mentioned the Monroe Institute. Tom Campbell, he gets into that a little bit too. Can you enlarge on that?
Look, I'd love to be able to, but I think, was it you, Adam, that sent me that link on the computer about PBEs, pre-birth experiences?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Yeah, because I was only reading about it about yesterday, actually, as we go to air now, and I was absolutely fascinated by it because in afterlife I do my own pre-birth experiences, but I've not examined it for other people, and I thought, wow, this is something I would really like to explore. But it's all part of the life between lives, and that's what we do when we go through to the afterlife. We look back on our previous life, and then we, when we're ready, and when we're assessed as being ready, if you like, we then start to prepare for our next life. So that is the pre-birth experience. But it's very much a dedicated part, shall we say, of your life between lives experiences. And it's something I would really like to learn a lot more about.
Yeah, I've put a bit up for that.
Adam asked you, Barry, about writing, the problems of writing a book, and you've had a lot of experience with that. And you also mentioned that maybe this was, you were being set up, if you like, to put it in plain words, you know, for something in the future. Well, Tom Campbell talks about that as well.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting side because, you know, certain people like yourself have been set up for this. So can you get back and maybe talk about when you started to feel you were being programmed, if you like, to be able to do something further? I mean, I'm not saying programmed in a mind control fashion, but being actually pushed or led some way into things that or knowledge and events that were going to be of importance to you in your future work.
Garth, it goes back to what I've written about in No Goodbyes, and that's life purpose. and combining that with destiny. Every single one of us has a purpose in being in this life. We're not just here as some kind of random little seed floating about and without any kind of direction. We all know why we're here, and that life purpose is inside us. Our soul knows. And once we can connect, and we can do this through meditation, we can do it through many different ways. I can teach you in 30 seconds how to connect and find out your life purpose. It's quite easy. But if you're prepared to follow through and do it, that is. But when we agree to come back into the next life, and quite often people are very happy in the afterlife, from what I understand, is to be floating around enjoying life and everything, but quite often there'll be a tap on the shoulder, okay, it's time to go back now. Oh, I don't want to go back. Yep, it's time for you to go back. And then the process starts. Why have I got to go back? What have I got to learn about? What is my life purpose? And this is when we start to go to group meetings, we're educated, we're helped, and we're shown what it is we need to achieve in this lifetime. Now, when we get down here, quite often we've forgotten all about that, and we've got to access that life purpose again. But it is there in the subconscious. And part of this life purpose are destiny points. Now, if life was just all predestined, all we'd be is a bunch of robots with somebody pushing buttons or a master puppeteer up there in the celestial realm somewhere. That's not the case. But I always equate it to like the plot points in a movie where there are certain times that a key event happens and takes the hero or the heroine or both off in certain directions, opens up new opportunities, new directions. This happens in life. We all have these destiny points in which we might meet somebody. We might have the opportunity to have a great job or the opportunity to be fired, so we can go on to get another good job. That's happened to me. And all of these are destiny points, and it's up to us as to how we then take that destiny point and work with the free will that we have also been given. So we can either take it and run with it, or we can say, no, I'm not interested in that, even though our agreement might have been beforehand, yes, we will run with it. We might get another opportunity then, another little tap on the shoulder in our dreams or whatever. Come on, here's another chance. Get in there and do it. But if we turn around and instead of doing these, decide to go off and take drugs or become a mad gambler or many other different things in life, then that's our free will. That's our choice. And we then have to go back and face up to what we've done when we get back to the other side. But in my own case, you asked me about my particular case. I really do believe that I had a long career in radio and television. And as I got to a certain point, I had this transformational time where I went through a divorce in 1990. And I knew then, intuitively, I knew that I had to go into a whole new direction in life. It just wasn't working for me. I was unhappy, not only because of the relationship, but I wasn't happy with where everything was going. I was working on a radio program on Radio 2GB in Sydney at the time, a commercial radio station. I was doing talkback radio, or in the States known as callback radio. And some of my guests that would come in and take calls were astrologers, clairvoyants, and whatever, because they always got such an incredible response. So all of a sudden, I was given this little message to go in and study astrology. And I told the guy who was the guest on the program, I'm going to study astrology with you next year in your class. He nearly fell off the chair. He said, you know what? I said, but, you know, what do you want to do that for? You're already on radio. You've got your own. I was running a PR company and that at the time. I said, I don't know, but I just need to do it. So I did. And that became the platform for a whole new direction in life for me that opened up my clairvoyant abilities as well. And then I went on. And then eventually the events I describe in Afterlife about being given the opportunity to grow as a medium as well, then that branched out and I went on. But if I hadn't have had all of that communication training and abilities, I don't think I could do what I'm doing now. Not that I'm saying, you know, look at me, I'm a great star. I'm just saying that in my own instance, this is the training ground that I had. Yes, I was making a living, but I was also being trained and accepting this direction that was really my true purpose in this lifetime.
Hmm. yes, that's it's very interesting, isn't it? Because as you said, you come to the end of one road and you can go left or right, say.
Yeah, or else turn around and go backwards.
it could be a totally different scenario.
Yep.
If you don't listen to that intuitive part that they call the guardian angel.
Especially if you've done a lot of work, Garth, in this lifetime to be a better person and then come back again and forget all about it and go on the wrong path. Because
yes.
I guess, Barry, people aren't seeing the signs, or they're not in tune to the signs that are all around them. But with, as you said, you know, the busyness of the life and all the distractions going on, you know, they're not seeing those little hints and little signals around them to take them where they need to go. And they're going off again, you know.
Well, this is very true, and life as we know it in the 21st century is very stressful. We're being absolutely besieged by information, whether it's on the internet or whether we've just got so much happening in our lives and so much knowledge and information being thrown at us all the time. We really do need to step aside and give ourselves this quiet time, call it meditation, whatever. But it's basically giving yourself a break. I was, because, you know, you're going to get this information that is going to be given to you. And I was equated to going to, say, a grand final or in the States, what they might regard as the Super Bowl. You've got about 80 or 100,000 screaming fans around you. And here you are trying to have a very intimate telephone conversation on your cell phone with somebody about something that is really you need to be very quiet about. How are you going to hear it? You can't, because all these fans are screaming and carrying on, having a great time. But that's what life is. So if you want to have this intimate conversation, either with yourself, with your own intuition, or with your guides, or whatever, you've got to find that quiet place. And we've all got the ability to do it. You might only need 10 or 15 minutes to be able to sit down quietly, turn off the phone, turn off the computers, close the books, get away from the family, get away from whatever, and just give yourself that peace so that you can slow right down and listen. Listen to your heart, because that is where the soul connects with the body, at the heart. So we talk about heart and soul. So when you want to connect and find out your soul purpose, I told you I'd give you a little hint on how to do this. Tune into your heart. I've run spiritual development groups over the years, and I found the best way of finding your life purpose is to cross your hands over your heart. Feel that heart beating. Boom, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. And there it is. Once you start to connect, clear your mind, get rid of all of those extraneous thoughts. Oh, I must go and do this. Oh, 10 minutes time, I'm going to phone call. Oh, yeah, I haven't done the shopping, I haven't made the bed, got to do the laundry. Forget all that. Give yourself a break. Put your hands over your heart. Connect with that heart energy, and then ask. Ask, what is my life purpose? Now, the statement of intention is one of the strongest things we can do, because if we don't have this statement of intention, we don't do it. And there's a universal law that says what you focus on expands. So quiet time, hands on heart, focus on what it is you want to know, whether it's your life purpose or what you need to know about a situation. And you can do this, and you can learn how to access that intuition, because intuition is only tuition from within. So you're getting your own inner wisdom, which is connected with your soul, connected through to your guides and everything like that. It's very simple, but it does take dedication.
Yeah.
And don't think if you're going to do it for the first 10 minutes that the secrets of the world are going to be revealed to you. This has to be done over a period of time.
Mm. Yes, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because
yes.
I think it's like the quick fix medicine. So everybody wants to, you know,
the
take
magic
a pill
bullet.
And be fixed up now, you know.
Impatient. Everyone's impatient, Garth. Another great article I put up on the website, Barry, was on these extra sensory perceptions like human telepathy and remote viewing. This is also shunned by the mainstream scientific community as well, and media, of course, but it was an article on classic experiments showing extremely significant results for human telepathy, which is so interesting, and it makes you think that, you know, this is something that we all have right now, it's part of who we are, but we're just, it's buried, isn't it, Barry, in all this muck and all this stuff that goes on in life. It's deep down in there, but it's this special part of us that we're not connecting with. And as you said, it you can't just do it in 5 seconds. I know it takes a lot of practice, and I found such a hard thing, Barry, is to get rid of all that junk out of your mind, you know.
You can do it.
Yeah, you can. It's, if you're watching TV and things like that, it just makes it worse. But it can be done. But it is a hard thing to really get it all out and just, as you said, go into that heart rhythm and connect that way. But it can be done. You just need to do it each day.
To make that intention.
Yeah,
well, Einstein said that we only ever use about 10% of our brain. There's been some people that refute that, but even if we use 30-40% of our brain, what about if we can just increase that and go into other things? And I think telepathy is one of them. I remember years ago that I was actually communicating. Noah was having a very instant relationship, now that I think back, with this young lady. It was a long time ago. And she told me about getting in touch, and she said, I sent you messages. Did you get them? And I did, actually. And I actually heard her voice and whatever. So we talked about this, and I happened to be sick about a week or so later, and I thought, oh, here's a good experiment. I'll just see how I go with telepathy. So I lay in bed, in my sick bed, and I sent a message to my mother, who was not that far away. It doesn't matter how far it is anyway with telepathy. I just said, okay, ring me. And I visualized my mother, and I said, ring me, ring me, ring me. Now, I normally would not have been home during that particular day, or during the day. And I focused for about 10 minutes, sending her that constant message, ring me, ring me. The next thing, phone rings, it's her. Oh, I just thought I'd ring up and see how you were. I'm actually sick today. Oh, are you? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, well, I'm glad I rang. Now, we can do this. We've got the brain power. We've got the abilities to do this. But it's like so many other things. Everybody's psychic. Everybody's got intuition. Anybody can be a clairvoyant or a psychic. Trouble is, a lot of people do it and they're absolutely rotten at the whole thing. We've got to be careful about that too. There's a warning in my book about that. But we've all got these abilities. It's how we choose to work with them, how we choose to grow, and the dedication and the intention that we put in there.
Yes, because that's a very important thing, that isn't it? I mean, they've talked about the Aboriginals in Australia being able to do that. And here we are with all our technology, and we can do so little, really, isn't it? I mean,
Indigenous tribes all around the world, not only Australian Aborigines, but the American Indian, Indigenous people have had this wonderful ability and understanding of how they can communicate with spirit. We could learn a heck of a lot from these people, but we don't. We call them savages, and what will they know? And because we've got computers and we've got the internet and we've done university degrees, we know a lot more about them than they will ever know. But they can teach us a heck of a lot because they are in tune with nature. They're in tune with their own inner spirit. And this is what we are lacking. We've gone too materialistic and too scientific in recent years. We're moving away. But I think more and more people are now starting to move back into these spiritual kind areas. And I'm not talking about religion here. I'm talking about the power of our own spirit and connection with the world of spirit.
Yes, that's an important thing. Science has been running 180 degrees away from the our consciousness, because I think they didn't really understand it. I was watching a program where, way back in the early 20th century, they were actually doing those two-slot tests on protons. So that's 100 years ago they were doing that.
Yeah.
And they evidently put it in the too hard basket because they knew there was something incredibly complex, if you like, to the human, the human brain to understand, because it just wasn't 1 + 1 = 2. So they lately there's a lot of the younger scientists or coming up in that era that have been taking it on and trying to find out more about it, and also explaining to lay people like ourselves, you know, particularly in that field. I find that fascinating because it doesn't have to be 1 + 1 = 2, does it?
No, it doesn't. And science, I think, as you so rightly said, Garth, has moved off into other very, shall we say, empirical laboratory-type situations. If you can't prove it in a test tube, it doesn't exist. But now they're starting to, and with the advent of quantum physics, we're moving into whole new areas. I mean, there are scientists out there now, Professor Robert Lanza being one of them, that are writing books proving, not just talking about, not just saying, yes, I think and I believe, no, proving with quantum physics that there is an afterlife, that there is a place that we all go to. And more scientists are moving in this direction. And this is the area that I specialize in, as you well know. But I'm not a scientific person, never was, failed miserably at science and maths at school. And so I've moved in different directions. But I think science, a lot of criticism about science is that it has become a religion. And so many people worship at the altar of science. And as such, this can be, I guess, skewed in certain directions so that we are not getting the right information and we are being controlled in scientific areas. Certainly in areas of big pharma, we are being controlled medically. We're being controlled and diseases are being created for us because they've got medicines there. They've got drugs that they've spent a lot of money developing. So we've got to sell those. So let's create something around this to be able to make sure we get our profits in. And this is not just some little rant that I'm doing. This is being shown more and more and more that science is great, yes, but it's like everything else. We need to be able to keep it in perspective.
Yes, and the moment it becomes a sort of a religion, it becomes, to the people anyway, we must believe it, whether we really, you know, understand it, even if we don't. But just to believe, like in a religion, is pretty useless as far as the human species is concerned, because we have to ask questions,
even if we can't understand it. We do, but the thing is that if you ask questions and you query anything, and I'm not setting up any definite answers here, but if you query vaccines, for instance, well, you are pilloried. But yet there's a lot of evidence around the damage that vaccines can do, even if it's just the adjuvants that they use. You know, like formaldehyde is used in vaccines, a lot of other mercury and things like that. But if you question that, you mention it, oh, what would you know? You're not a scientist. We know everything that's going on. That's just one area. So you're not allowed to question the great God of science because they know. What do you know? You don't have a degree in science. So if you don't do what we tell you, then you are just a troublemaker. So go away.
A terrorist.
A terrorist. A science terrorist. Yes. Oh, heavens, we'll be flagged now for using the T word.
Yes. No, that's very well put, Barry. That certainly sums that up, because that is correct. And people fall into that with this sort of herd mentality. And if you don't agree with everybody else, well, there's something wrong with you, you know?
Exactly. Well, I know you guys have you've interviewed John Rappaport, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah, well, John appears on my program a couple of times too, and he is a real stirrer. And what he's saying, I can imagine, is creating all sorts of disturbances. He's never going to get a medal from Big Pharma, that's for sure.
We
need people out there like that. Even if you don't necessarily totally believe everything they say, they are making you think instead of being pushed into a corner. And this is part of why I write these books as well, to help people think and not just be told, yes, if you die and you're good, you'll go to heaven. If you're bad, you'll go to hell. Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. So we all go to the same place. We just go to different levels. There's no hell. But, you know, you've got to atone for what you've done. But there's this control that the belief systems have had over people for thousands of years. Once we start to question that control, and start to learn about what life is all about, then we can have a far more productive life and return to the afterlife. And that is what my spirit contacts in the other side are wanting, this information to come out, so that we can think for ourselves and not just become puppets.
Now, would you go into this levels you just mentioned, Barry, again? You did it before, but I think, like myself, I'd like to understand more about it, and I think people out there listening would as well, to understand these levels, not in a religious sense, but in a consciousness sense.
We're multidimensional as well, I would say, Barry, and so that you have, you could talk about that as well, this sort of our energy bodies or our higher dimensional forms, higher parts of us that are there as well, because that's very interesting.
Oh, look, this is a pretty vast topic here, but essentially when we return to the world of spirit, there are many levels, just like there are levels on Earth. I use the phrase as above, so below many times in my books, because Earth is a reflection of the afterlife, and we bring these things back with us. We have levels here, whether they're economic levels, social levels, or whatever, educational levels. We've got all of these levels, and when we go back to the afterlife, we go back to the level that is appropriate to us. Yes, we connect with soul families, but they may not be on the same level of soul development as us, but we can still see them and be with them. It's like living in a big city with your friends and family. You live in different parts of that city, but you're all doing different things and you're all doing your own thing as such. But you get together every now and then, whether it's socially or familiarly or what, and that's what happens in the afterlife. We take our energy back with us. Now, the afterlife is around us. It's not up there or down there or whatever. It actually occupies the same space as we do. It's a different dimension. And as such, in this dimension, it vibrates a lot higher than the earth plane. So that as we develop as souls, so does our vibration level increase. So the higher we go, the higher is our vibration. Now, obviously, if we're a pretty nasty sort of a person who's done dreadful things, killed lots of people, been a drug baron, a terrorist, whatever, there's that T word again, then the density of your soul is going to be at a very, very low vibratory level, and you will go into lower levels of the afterlife. It's not hell. It's not purgatory. It is an area where people are helped. Spirits are helped. They're not tortured or you know, demons sticking hot forks into them and things like that. Well, that's just Dante-esque rubbish. What happens is we are helped lovingly on the other side. There are spirits, advanced spirits from many higher levels, coming to help these people understand what they have done, what impact they've caused, and they get to experience the hurt and the fear and the damage they've done. They get to experience it firsthand. Instant karma in that regard. Then they're helped and eventually able to be recycled and come back again into another life to be able to start to atone for whatever it is and bring back that karma they need to work on. But the average person then will go into that area of the afterlife that, as I said, relates to the vibration that they have achieved at a soul level. There are countless areas in the afterlife. And the one that we mainly go to, did you want me to talk about that chapter I'd written in the afterlife about the vastness of the spirit world, or did you just want a general sort of a chat about that?
Whatever you'd like, Barry.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, in afterlife, I quoted a guy called Frederick Myers, who was an amazing man. He was a professor of classics at Cambridge University in England in the 19th century, and he was fascinated with the afterlife, and he founded the first Society for Psychical Research back in 1882. When he eventually passed over, he communicated back through various mediums in various parts of the world, and all the information that he sent back was in various bits. So somebody had to sit down and put all these bits together, and when they did, they found a whole story. So he didn't just come through one medium. He came through several, quite a lot of different mediums in various parts of the world. Now, what he talked about is that there's an enormous amount of details of life in the spirit world, which were received in many cases by automatic writing. And he says that the plane of illusion is where most of us go to. He described beautiful, peaceful surroundings there, people living communities, earth-type houses, and they eat and drink and play sport and do things like this, even go to work. Life almost appears to be taking up from where it left off on earth. Every pleasure is there, and but you still have to go to work, you still have to learn, you meet various spirit people that are going to help you understand what you've done in the last life and prepare for the next life. The majority of people go there into this, what he described as the plane of illusion. Other people have talked about these various levels, but that was the level that he actually describes as such. And everything there, communication and everything, is done with the power of thought. So if you want to create a house, you do it by visualizing, and you're able to create it there. And the lifestyle is really very, very similar, as I said, to what we do on Earth. It sounds ideal, a real paradise, if you like, but after a while, it does start to get a bit boring because the soul yearns to develop. The soul really needs to move on. It's like having rest and recreation. After a big holiday, you might be really champing at the bit to get back to work or whatever your purpose in life is. So we have access to all our families and friends on Earth when we're in this plane of illusion. And also, as I said, working with our spiritual guides over there. It would appear that the vast majority of people end up on this plane of illusion at various levels there. So the next level he describes is the fourth plane. He called it the world of idealized form. And there we don't need to communicate with our earthly contacts, because the soul explores avenues way beyond the confines of the earth plane. We don't need to reincarnate when we get to this stage. We're free of rigid intellectual structures and dogmas, and the mind is given a whole lot of new freedom, and it learns how to create an infinite variety of forms and to have access to energies and colors way, way beyond our imagination. And only very evolved souls are able to access this and further higher planes. But we have to earn our place here to be admitted, and it usually only comes after many, many, maybe thousands of lifetimes. The next level he talks about, the plane of flame. And here a spirit takes on a body of flame so they can explore the universe for the cosmic understanding without being harmed by temperatures or turbulence. Now, this would explain where planets like Venus, for instance, which are just pure flame, where people can actually exist in a situation like this. These spirits at this level of the plane of flame are able to travel into various parts of our galaxy and beyond to experience life and to grow and to actually be in a form on these planets that does not require a human type of body, and they're not going to be burned up there. We're no longer in a form that we understand. We become what's best done as an outline, and we're part of a group soul. The sixth level then is the plane of light, where the inhabitants are evolved souls. And by this stage, they've lived through all aspects of the created universe, and they've completed all the growth that is needed. They've left behind every need for matter and form, and they're purely existing as white light. And here, pure reason reigns supreme. Emotion and passion and things like that we have, they're just totally non-existent. These souls are now white light, and according to Myers, the pure thought of their creator. And then the seventh plane, he calls it the plane of the spirit realm, is the domain of God or the creator. Now, Myers was not a religious man, but he describes this final area as being a dwelling not only out of time, but outside of any universe. And he describes it as the passage from form into formlessness. But the plane of illusion is where most of us go, and that has many, many different levels. And we can find ourselves going from level to level without, it's not as if somebody comes up and says, okay, well, you passed your university exams, you passed that, okay, here's a gate, go through there, you're in the next level now. It just sort of happens. my spirit contacts on the other side say that you all of a sudden find yourself there without even realizing that you've done it, but you are advancing little bit by little bit. And that's what's happened to my partner and my late partner, Judy, whom I write about a lot in my books. She has advanced into some of the higher realms, but I think she is still on the plane of illusion because we can still contact. In fact, she's around us right now.
Wow. How is that? Explain a little bit about that, Barry. I guess some people have to read the book, Judy was sort of a soul partner for you that you were with for a few years, and she passed away. And then you've reconnected, made this contact with her on the other side, which is incredible and remarkable. So
they're not real.
It's strange to get your head around, Barry, I guess, with also the non-physical kind of thought responsive stuff as well. You know, in that sort of realm where you just think what you want to do, you know, that you don't have a voice box, as you say, you don't have eyes, you know, you got to get swipe that physical away. And yep. You're just back into this spiritual form. But this communication with her, tell us a little bit about that at least, and how that is, and how you're able to do it, and where you do it. How does it work?
Well, it started off, as I wrote in Afterlife, that shortly after she passed, a medium that I'd been working with, because Jude and I had started a radio show from home called Celestial Power, and I wrote all about that in my book Afterlife. But I was given permission to contact her through Ruth Phillips. And Ruth was fantastic. She'd only met Judy very, very briefly before she passed, but she had information from Judy that there's no way she could have known, so I knew it was Jude. Anyway, I was then given permission from the powers that be to expand my own abilities, shall we say, as a medium, and after that we started to work together. And I was running spiritual development groups at the time, and Judy would come through. I called her my little spirit wrangler, because she would come through in groups and bring people with her that wanted to connect with members of my group. And that was, we had some amazing connections with that. Then that went on, and she kept on sending me all these messages from the spirit. Okay, you got to write a book. There's a book in all this. I want you to write a book. And I just, I got other things to do. Yeah, I'll write a book. I haven't written a book before. How am I going to write a book? Anyway, I kept on getting all these messages from various people, including my good friend Bob Murray, great medium in Canada. And Bob said, "Hey, Barry," he said, I've got Judy here with me. And she says, "When are you going to write that book?" So I figured, all right, I've had enough nagging from spirits. I'll write the book, which I did. And that was Afterlife. And we have stayed in contact ever since, although now she has moved on a little bit. But the contact I had was definitely in the conscious medium area as opposed to a trance medium. I didn't go into trance to contact her. But I have kept connection via a couple of other fantastic mediums as well that I work with here. Val Hood from the UK, who now lives in Australia, and Ezio De Angelis. Ezio is a wonderful, he was Psychic of the Year here in 2012. And he and Val both connected with Judy and bring lots and lots of messages. The other big connection I've got is with a guy called John Dingwall. Now, John runs, well, not runs, he is the mouthpiece or the spokes spirit, as I call him, for a group of spirits on the other side, about 95 to 100 of them, I believe, from what I've been told. And John comes through a trance medium, Kelly, and Kelly just allows his spirit to go to one side. John comes through, and we have all these amazing conversations. And John represents all of these spirits in the afterlife. And I'm told that before even I do any kind of session these days, they are with me, and they're with me now. Because a lot of the information that's pouring out of my mouth right now, I just don't have to think. It just happens. It's just there. They are speaking through me. And Judy is part of this group, and I'm delighted to say that my father in this life is part of this group, because we never really became as close as I would have liked to have in this life, but now he is working with me on the other side, and it absolutely delights me to know that, because I've had verification on that by other mediums who know nothing about me or him when we were at the Afterlife Conference earlier this year. So my information comes through a variety of sources, directly through mediums and through a trans medium and a group of people on the other side. So it's not just one little thing. I'm not sitting in a corner fantasizing and making all this up. I'm getting it information from so many different sources. When I put it all together, that's how it emerges and goes into my books.
Oh. Mm. She was, yeah. Judy was your partner in other lifetimes as well, Barry, from your book. So do you think that she will reincarnate and come back to the earth plane?
Well, not before I get back over there, I hope.
So maybe you might stay as well, Barry, because you're onto it.
I don't want to stay. I'll do my bit, and then I'll be very happy to go home to the afterlife.
From the afterlife, you will stay there. Do you think you'll reincarnate again, Barry, if you're onto it, if you know how it all operates?
Well, that's not up to me, actually, but I'll wait and see what happens on that one, Adam. I'll wait and see what happens.
Just to go back, Barry, as well, yes. You know, I have a book. Arthur and I have talked about this a bit, and I have a book called Beyond the Darkness by Angie Fenimore. Haven't gone into it yet, and she had a near-death experience that was hellish. And a lot of people have that, you know, where they see monsters, Barry, where they say they're going to go to hell and they have this fear. Looking at your book and looking at some other work and some reading that I've done, Gus mentioned this quite a while ago, and it got me thinking, Barry, it really makes sense that we create our own fear. And I got that from your book, and I think that if someone, for example, were to have an out-of-body experience in a fear state, and psychedelics can bring up fear in people and they can see horrible things, but if someone were to have an out-of-body type of experience, Barry, in a fear state, they're going to see demons and devils and monsters, but it's a creation of them. They created it, right?
Look, definitely, we all have nightmares, whether we're kids or adults. I had the weirdest dream the other night. Fortunately, I can't remember it, but I woke up thinking, what on earth was all that about? Absolutely all over the place. There weren't any monsters and things in it. But obviously, and if you happen to be taking things like drugs and whatever, or even pharmaceuticals can have huge side effects that you look at some of the drugs we're given through doctors and chemists, pharmacists, you look at the list of side effects and think, oh, my God, if any one of those things should hit, what's going to happen? So we've got these outside influences plus, as you said, Adam, our own inner fears. And some of those inner fears may go back from childhood when the belief system we were brought up in says, if you are bad, you will go straight to hell. You'll be tortured forever. I mean, there are stories around that. I don't want to pick on any religion or anything, but there are stories about kids who had dreadful experiences at school with nuns and various people like that who put the fear of God into them. Now, I think the fear of God is such a dreadful term. From my experience and my knowledge, God is all about love. The word fear does not come into it. And I think, as I said to you before in our last chat, I use the acronym for fear, F-E-A-R, is false evidence appearing real. And that is what most of our fears are. It's false. We've brought them up ourselves. So I can't, you know, obviously comment about this book because I haven't read it. But as I have been told from many different sources, there is no place called hell. But, and I've got a big but here. I mean that in the nicest way. One night I was doing a meditation in a group and I found myself out in a very, very lonely place. I felt I was on the top of a mountain. I was on my own. I felt absolutely desolate. It was a kind of life between life experience and I knew I had been put there to contemplate what I had done in that previous lifetime and nobody was torturing me, but I was, I guess, punishing myself through loneliness, through isolation. And when I came out of that meditation, I knew what it was, and I thought to myself, I never, ever want to have to go back into that place again. I created it. I created the blackness because I needed to learn the lessons from that. So maybe this author has created this to learn some lessons. What those lessons are, only she will ever know, she and her guides.
So this sort of Illuminati and government stuff, Barry, what do you think about this? Are we feeding it? Because, you know, if you look at this, you know, these fractions within government, if they know about this and they're able to manipulate the fear in humans to keep us bogged down in that low-level frequency, you know, that vibration, then it makes sense that they would use fear-based mind control against humans. But at the end of the day, we've got to ask ourselves, why are they doing that? If they're just humans, you know, why would they do this to their own people? Because it does seem that there's something here, Barry, that wants to sort of block us from finding out who we really are. And it's just crazy.
Adam, this control has been going on for thousands of years. In Roman times, they called it bread circuses, so that you give the masses the Colosseum, the games, the circuses, chuck them a bit of food here and there, keep them occupied while we get on with running the whole country or the whole world, as in the case of Rome. Nowadays, it's called sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The powers that be control us through sex. Look at it. Doesn't matter whether it's video or promiscuity or in whatever area. Drugs, well, we don't have to talk about drugs. Rock and roll, that's music, that's football, that's cricket, that's, you know, every kind of diversion that's there, that's created. Video games, technology. Keep the masses amused so that we can get on with running the world. We are the power brokers and we are the ones who will make all the money. You are basically out there as cannon fodder. You will do exactly what we program you to do, and at the same time you're thinking you're having a great life. But we'll tie you down with mortgages, we'll tie you down with all sorts of addictions and everything like that, so you don't have a chance to think for yourself. But more and more people are starting to think for themselves, and they are saying we don't want to be dominated by these a world government or you know, the powers that are unseen. Even President Clinton talked about the power behind the government, that, you know, as president he wasn't in control. He talked about the secret world government. I mean, it's been written about many, many times, and you can Google it. Just Google the Bilderberger Society for a start. You ever done the Bilderberger Society?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, look what goes on there.
Yeah.
The influential people of the world get together and decide what's going to happen for the next 12 months.
Yes.
It's been going on for a long time. We as individuals have to stand up for ourselves and not be controlled.
We're feeding it then, aren't we, Barry? As I said, we're feeding into the system. And so,
well, we have to, unfortunately, because they do control us with mortgages and finances and
it's
the
hard,
whole economic
yeah.
area. And, you know, people like Monsanto are controlling the world's food supplies and things like this. Control is something that is just getting more and more. But we have to be able to work out for ourselves what we want to do while still working within the system, because we don't have a choice about working in the system.
Well, he's gone. I was reading articles, Barry, about, as Garth was talking about before, young children. There was a study done on it where they actually remembered their past lives and that they'd been in an afterlife as well.
Oh, yeah.
People said they actually remembered being in an afterlife and going through and being a baby, waking up there. And but I was also reading that some of these children, Barry, as we know, are so sensitive to that, and so much more in touch with the spiritual world around them, that doctors are actually putting them on psycho drugs, you know, which is so terrible, isn't it? It's so sad. You know, I guess it's like they used to burn women at the stake because they were witches, because they were into the natural world and they were healers. But it's the same with kids. They're very in tune after their birth process. They actually can remember all these things, and they can remember where they came from in their last life. They're in tune with that, but the doctors are putting them on drugs because they think there's something wrong with them mentally. And this is unfortunately a part of our world, Barry, but only we can just try and get better at this. And I think you're right, Barry. People are waking up to this, but this whole system of these men that always want to retain this control, this brute force, it just baffles me so so much that this is going on. I did send you an article, Barry, when you got back to me about this soul-catching net. Are we recycled at death to remain in this matrix? I agree with you, Barry, I think, but some of that makes sense because I would think if people are living a life of such fear and death and horror and all this stuff, Barry, and they're passing over and then coming back and doing it all again, there could be some truth to that's happening, that they're just never seeing the right path to take in each life, and they're just falling into the same trap over and over again as the technology gets so more advanced, you know, with the televisions and as we said, everything's just busy, 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 and they come back into the life and just completely have no way of reconnecting with who they were, you know?
Well, I wrote about the power of negativity in the afterlife in No Goodbyes, and negativity is a very, very powerful force, and it's even in the afterlife. And I think it's something that needs to be sort of examined when people buy the book, and I hope they are going to buy the book, that negativity, there are negative groups even in the afterlife, and certainly, of course, on the earth. And if we do get trapped by this cycle of negativity, yes, I mean, the idea of a soul net is a little sort of, I don't know, a bit too colourful for me. But imagine somebody out there with a whacking great net grabbing souls and flinging them back earthly direction again. But I think it could be technology, Barry. Maybe. I think the idea is there. And you know, yes, if we are coming back without processing our afterlife and our previous life experiences, if we're doing that and we're allowing or being controlled in that, and I'm not saying that it does happen, but it's quite feasible that it does, then, yeah, you know, we are getting some pretty weird sort of people arriving back on the planet. And I'm not talking about kids these days who are coming back with all sorts of problems like autism and Asperger's and whatever, because I think a lot of those kids are very, very highly intelligent. I know a few of them. I think a lot of those kids that we are now shoving on Ritalin and various things, when they come to understand their own abilities eventually, and they do get into positions of authority, that is if they haven't been destroyed by the certain drug systems in between, they are going to make very big changes in this world. And these are the sort of people that are coming through right now. Young kids. I know one of them, my young grandson, is just an absolute whiz. He's 14 years of age and he's already doing university subjects.
Mm.
So, you know, and he's got one of these things I was talking about before. So it's just, there are so many possibilities and so many combinations of things happening. But that's the world, isn't it? Everybody has their own unique story. Everybody has their own unique return to the afterlife. And everybody is the star of their own movie.
Yeah, I've heard the universe is expanding, Barry, because of our thoughts, which is a great idea, really. And, you know, is the universe around us getting bigger and bigger and expanding from human thought? You know?
That's one that's beyond my comprehension. But
It would be the conscious
consciousness, you know. Yeah, around us.
Conscious universe.
Obviously, if we become more positive and better people, it expands, you know. It's a very interesting stuff, Barry. We might finish up, Barry, and I might switch foot here if you don't mind.
Sure.
We'll just talk about Radio Out There, your show. Last night, Garth, I heard this before, but I listened to it again, Barry, on your show. You actually interviewed Alec Newald, which was a fantastic interview with him, because I think I read that book, and Garth might as well. It was Co-Evolution, Garth, the true story of a man taken for 10 days to an extraterrestrial civilization. That was a great interview, Barry.
Yeah, Alec's a great guy. We were at the Nexus conference a couple of years ago, and all sorts of strange things happen around Alec.
Yeah.
He finds it very difficult. They won't let him out of New Zealand. He had to get it was very hard to get him over for the Nexus conference. He and I actually filmed a TV documentary together, what was going to be a TV documentary, and somehow, we don't know how, but somehow all the vision suddenly disappeared. And lots of different things happened. He maintains that he was taken away. He's written his book, Co-Evolution, and it was republished or updated about 2 or 3 years ago.
1989 he was taken.
Yeah, but he updated it again in 2011? Yeah, it would have been 2011.
The book, yeah.
Anyway, he maintains that he was taken off to another planet, and et cetera, et cetera. And when he came back again, there are the sort of the men in black suits and dark glasses following him around all the time. It's sort of a combination of what he's experienced, the information he comes out, and a bit of conspiracy stuff. I'm not quite sure.
It was
but
strange.
Alec, I know Alec, and he seems to be a very, very genuine man.
Yeah,
and
it's a genuine case.
He's not making anything out of this. No. He's not making any money or anything, because apart from a few sales of his book, his life is far more restricted than it would be otherwise.
Yeah, he seemed to be on a 3-hour drive there into Auckland in New Zealand, and then just missed all that time.
Disappeared.
Yeah, disappeared. Well, he's just said so many interesting things in your interview there, Barry, as well. The way he talked to that, he felt like he was extracted from his body with technology, and that his body was put into storage while he was having the experience. So he said that he was sort of taken to an artificial dimension that these beings had constructed, which is incredible. So it seemed, because I heard you ask him that it seemed like this abduction experience was almost like a near-death experience, and we've heard that these visitors tie into that near-death experience world that we have, that's when they can access us. So the abduction seemed like an out-of-body experience, but done with technology, Barry. It's really kind of strange, and the way that he explained these entities, you know, how they were manufacturing this environment, trying to survive, and that they seemed almost hybrid, and they had dark or very bright blue eyes as well, was very interesting. So I'll have to go back and go through that book, because it's not like the average experience that you hear people saying they have. And also it was interesting, Barry, how he said these grey aliens could originate from Earth, tying into our government as well. You know, that was very interesting. So he talks a lot about the spirit world and everything. He's a very spiritual person, and combining that with his abduction is really interesting. And I'll have to listen to that interview again. It was a great talk.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You're bringing back memories. It was ages ago that I did that particular interview. But I was, funnily enough, I was communicating with Alec only a few weeks ago, and he was unable to get out of New Zealand to come over for this year's Nexus conference in Australia. And but he's hoping that he can do so in the near future. But they have restricted his traveling. And I mean, why? Because he's written a book about being abducted? That's the only thing, unless he's holding back information that none of us know about. But it's a very strange set of circumstances, Adam.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before as well, like the movies through Hollywood, Barry, they're creating this ugly sort of extraterrestrial races that are going to destroy and eat us, you know? And that creates fear in us, don't we? We think they're all up there. But his experience is with peaceful people who actually were very highly technologically evolved and spiritually evolved, but needed him for something, but were very kind and good to him. So, you know, we're being made to think something different, you know, which is a fear-based mind control again. But again,
that's very much a part of the government control system making Hollywood movies where we're all going to be destroyed, you know, like the series V, you know, they all came down and they're all reptiles and they're going to eat us all.
Alien,
Whereas, you know, I've talked to a lot of other people who communicate with people on the other side, with people, aliens and whatever, and they are not here to eat us and do dreadful things. They're actually, in many cases, here to help us.
I wonder if we're unique in the universe, Barry, because we have a soul. I wonder if they use technology to sort of do the same thing.
No, not from what I understand. No.
So all sort of spiritual or soul-based.
Yeah.
Very
in fact, John, my spirit source, my spoke spirit in the world of spirit, says that there is a part of the afterlife near where he is where there are many, many alien souls who live there. He said he hasn't accessed it yet, so it's obviously a level above his pay grade, as it were. But he said, yes, they are there, and they do come. And they also, in other worlds, they have their own afterlife. So we are very similar, you know. The soul energy is the continuing of life, and that's what it is. Life doesn't die. Life doesn't end when the body perishes. And that's the message that I've been trying to put across with both of us. Yes. No fear, no need to fear, because we don't die. Only the body dies.
Yeah, and I guess Alec does say that about our planet's history, Barry, that there's so much historical stuff and things that are being hidden from us, this hidden knowledge, that these elites, as they call themselves, they carry through the ages and they jealously guard it. I like how he says that. They hide it from us, so this secret sort of information and knowledge that they have to gain their power and get more powerful, it's obvious that they just want to keep that, you know, you know, in their clutches, you know, as well. Yeah. But I think it's all going to come out, you know, and I think it's really sad, isn't it, that a guy like this would be barred from coming to talk in Australia. Do you think that was New Zealand that did that to him, Barry, or was it Australia that did it, or both?
Oh, possibly both. I really couldn't comment on that one. Mm. It's just something that I've heard from Alec that it was the New Zealand authorities that won't let him.
Criminal record.
Yeah, they won't let him out of the country and whatever. But anyway.
Well, if you read about New Zealand from Greg Hallett, you would understand it. It's the most polluted, most criminalised.
Yeah, a lot of corruption there, Barry. New Zealand, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, maybe all these elite that are around us, Barry, do you think this could be part of our education, if you like, back into our real consciousness? Because, you know, they talk about the devil and they talk about all this stuff. Do you think this elite system that we're working under, which can change our lives so dramatically through, like, TV and the media, etc., this is all part of our individual challenge to be able to
overcome it, guys.
Overcome it. Yes,
you can see Barry. Yeah, how they're keeping us in strict control through fear, can't you? It's so, when you look at it, it really fades away, though, doesn't it? It becomes almost silly.
Yeah. Well, as we talked about before, you know, it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll these days. So you've got to find a way to be able to live your own life and to be able to still exist within the system, but to do it to the utmost of your ability and your own soul development and your own intuitive abilities come into play here very much.
Yeah, and it's good for people to look at this fear, isn't it, Barry, and work it out for themselves and make a positive thing out of it, you know?
Yeah,
it's silly for us to not talk about it and completely ignore it, and that's what you do in your book. You do go into the fear side because it's a powerful thing, you know? Yep, it's so powerful.
It is indeed.
Yeah, well, so we'll pack up now, Barry. Why don't we talk about the book and where people can grab the book, and then just mention your Radio Out There show, because it's on each week and a lot of people will want to tune into that and have a listen to your shows and the archives in the website, like I did. You can go and listen to Alec Newald interview there in the archives.
Okay, fair enough. Well, the radio program is just on the internet at radiooutthere.com. So it's three words, but all joined together, radiooutthere.com. And there's links across to both of my books from that, from Afterlife and No Goodbyes. But they're both available now around the world and released in America just a week or so ago by Tatcha, which is an imprint of Penguin Books. So No Goodbyes is the latest one, Insights from the Heaven World, or in America, it's called something quite a little bit different, No Goodbyes, Life-Changing Insights from the Other Side.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you just go in there and Google that, or else you can go into my website as well, which is BarryEatonNoGoodbyes.com.
Okay, I'll put those links up as well accompanying this podcast today. Barry, and also the books are available on Kindle as well, ebook.
Oh, yes, available Kindle through Amazon, through Barnes & Noble, through all the normal sites, and, of course, bookshops. Let's not forget bookshops, guys.
Yeah.
I love bookshops.
We talk about that a bit, Barry. It's I know.
I love going into bookshops. Ever since I was a kid, I used to go into secondhand bookshops, and then if I've got some time, I'll go and disappear into a bookshop and just walk around. I love it.
That's one of the problems with the Kindle, isn't it? Because Adam mentioned earlier about referring back to a book you've got in your hand. Well, yep. I find with a Kindle it's very difficult to do that.
Can't do it. Cannot
you
do
can't
it.
Do it, basically. No.
I'm a book
You
person.
Can, but it's a hell of a problem, whereas in a book you can go back to the index and pick the chapter and go and read it.
Lick it open. That's exactly it. Yep. Love it.
Come on.
All right, guys, look, thanks a lot for everything. I really appreciate your time and being on the program again, and all the very best.
Great to have you, Barry, and please take care of yourself, and we'll keep in touch and see how you're going and let me know how your books go, and good luck. It's great to speak with you, as always.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, Garth.
Thanks, Barry.
Okay, all the best, Barry.
Okay, thanks for listening. Thanks to Barry Eaton. I hope people can grab his books, and they're really nice. And thanks, Garth, and we will be back next week as usual. Take care.